All right, so we watched the 1970s Around the World in 80 Days cartoon, and it you know, it had some problems. And I can just kind of gauge by just viewership numbers. Well, hold on, let me just bring this up. I think this is kind of an interesting way to, in our little tiny small way, just to gauge how popular a show is. Yeah, so just for recent stuff that we've watched, Dusty's Trail has 500 views, you know, it's a little bit remembered. The Gilligan cartoon, 1,600 views, you know, good old Gilligan.
Good old Gilligan.
Star Trek Animated, 1,700 views. Have Gun Will Travel, coming up on 800s, you know, that's all, you know, pretty average for us. Like, you know, a few hundred people, maybe 1,000 if it's a popular show, whatever. The Around the World in 80 Days 1972 cartoon has 10 views, and it's been up for a whole week. Like, nobody on earth remembers that cartoon, and nobody cares about it. You know, like, that's very evident.
Well, I don't think they're missing much.
Yeah, no, it seems appropriate. I think I even said in that episode, because we were testing out a new recording thing. So I was like, yeah, let's do something no one cares about. And I guess I nailed it on that one. But anyway, it got us talking about Around the World in 80 Days. And you mentioned that there was this show with David Tennant that I had not been aware of. So we're going to hop into that. We're going to watch an episode of this show. But one thing that's weird about this, I guess maybe because older TV shows, it can be easier to find information about because they've just been around longer, you know, and there's just more history. I can't find anything about this show. Like, it's a 2021 TV series. I can find the details of all the different companies that helped finance it. You know, it's a BBC show, but also France Television, and a station in Italy, a German station, Belgium. So a bunch of different countries came together to help finance this. I mean, that's a little interesting, I guess. It stars David Tennant, is quite well received. And I guess the only other thing I know is this season has 8 episodes and it has been renewed for a second season. So that makes me think like, oh, does that mean they didn't make it? They did not get all the way around the world yet? Or is season 2 going to be a different adventure? I don't know. But yeah, unfortunately, I can't tell you anything about this show because there's just nothing about it. It's just like, yep, here's a show. Everybody seems to like it. All right. But you did say you saw this at some point, right? Or some of it?
Yeah, I saw it. And the show, it finished. I mean, that it started with the, oh, you know, the fellas at the club making a bet and then the tour around the world. And they ended up back in England at the end of the series that I saw. And I presumed that was the end. I didn't realize they could make a second version of it, but who knows? I mean, I don't really know the original story Around the World in 80 Days. I've never read it. But this show, yes, it had a beginning and it had an end. And I thought, oh, well, that's it. I'm very surprised to hear that they're doing a second series of it, a second season. But it was good, very good.
That's actually interesting. Yeah, that's good to know in a weird way, because I guess it would have been presumptuous of them to only get halfway around the world and just assume they were going to get renewed. But yeah, I don't know. That could be interesting, because this sort of seems like the best of both worlds. Like, if this season is the complete adventure and they do get all the way around the world, then great. And then season 2, like, who knows? Yeah, maybe they'll just... It's always kind of interesting. Like, it doesn't always work out, but when people... when they have to remix it or they have to come up with a new twist, you know, like what if there was a sequel? What would you do? Do you just go a different route around the world? Do you do it in less days? Do you do something more complicated in more days? Yeah, I'm interested. That'll be neat. I'll keep my eyes peeled for season 2. We'll check that out when it comes out.
Where did this come from, Grayson? There's no postmark. Grayson, who brought this postcard into my house?
The postman, sir.
That'll be all.
Is it bad news, sir?
So yeah, I definitely did like that show, but I do think maybe while we talk about it, we can split it into halves, the first half and the second half, because I do feel like they're significantly different. And the first half, no notes. I loved it. I thought the setup was super good in that show. And I mean, I think it's weird to compare anything really to that, 1970s version of Around the World in 80 Days. But just as an example, Passepartout was so much better in this. I mean, everybody, I feel like, was really well cast in this. But, like, he was so annoying in that cartoon, where I feel like in this show, he's the way he should be. You know, he's supposed to be the guy who gets the rich aristocrat through this situation. You know, he's the one who knows what to do. He's the one who's able and capable. And, yeah, just, like, a million times better than that version we watched last week.
I found the sets in this, the entire show, are remarkable. I mean, they really put a lot of money and effort into developing the sets of this thing. Action-packed. The first part, of course, is the setup. So it's not as action-packed, but it's very interesting to watch when you watch the rich men at their club and you see how the kitchen staff in the downstairs is overworked, crowded, as opposed to the opulence of the upstairs of 1872 Britain. And you can so obviously see all these class distinctions right from the get-go. But it catches your interest right from the beginning with that big clock, that beautiful, beautiful big clock and the time ticking by. You know, it's really exceptionally well done.
Yeah, I wonder if that's one reason why it is a co-production of so many different networks from different countries, maybe so they could put some extra money into it. So as far as David Tennant goes, I'm aware of him, and I know he's pretty much the most famous, most popular of the modern Doctors. Have you seen much of his Doctor Who stuff?
Yeah, I've seen quite a bit of his Doctor Who stuff. And I've seen him in other British things. He's a very talented actor, and he never plays the same role twice. He is not David Tennant. You know how some American actors, especially, as soon as you see them, you forget the character that they're playing and you focus on the actor themselves. Tennant is one of those British actors who can play any number of different roles, and you're caught up in the character that he plays and you forget who he is as an actor. To me, that's real acting, when you don't focus on the star quality, I guess, is not so much actor as star quality. And in this, he's completely different than he is in, like, Doctor Who, which is what we mostly know him as.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little curious. I should catch up more on Doctor Who one of these days, but I always got the sense from a distance that I felt like one of the reasons why maybe he was popular as a doctor is I kind of felt like the new Doctor Who's got off on a weird start, where Doctor Who was far too cool, you know, he had a leather jacket and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, this David Tennant guy, just the sense I got was it seems a little more appropriate that Doctor Who should be a bit nerdy, you know, and that seemed to fit, like people did seem to like him far better as a doctor. So I guess I can't say exactly how he's the same or different, because I'm just not familiar enough with his Doctor Who stuff, but he brings a bit of that to this role. Like, he does feel like appropriately over his head, you know, like he's clearly sheltered. He wants to do adventure, but he's really not up for it. Like, he could never make this journey on his own. And I thought that was so funny that his initial plan, once they decide, oh, I should mention that too, that I did read that the bet, the 20,000 pound bet, is like $1.8 million in modern money. But he was going to bring his butler, his old doddering butler who barely knows what's going on. And like, that would have been a good show in a different way, like a comedy. But yeah, that's where I feel like this is very well cast, that he is the perfect, somewhat, I mean, I'm not, capable is the wrong word. He's willing, you know, he wants to do adventure, but he obviously can't pull it off. Where Passepartout is, yeah, like slick, the slick operator. Even I loved how Passepartout took it into his own hands to even get this job, you know. He like snuck his way. He overheard that Fogg needed a new valet, and he snuck his way into this position because he had to jump ship from his previous position because he punched some dickhead in the face. And, you know, it's just like, what a cool character. So yeah, on both sides. I don't know how I feel yet about Abigail Fix. I don't know that she hasn't really done enough yet, but the two dudes I feel like are just like perfect, really well done.
I'm wondering if in the original story there is an Abigail Fix, because she is a very liberated woman. She pushes her way into a man's world, whereas historically most women would just back off. And when they were told, like, to leave the club because you might frighten the men, they would just leave. But she didn't. She kept pushing her way in, which was very fitting about, because Women's Lib was kind of gaining, just beginning to gain prowess about that time. And of course, by the time 1900 comes along, which is only 30 years later, women are really kind of pushing their way into men's worlds.
Yeah, I don't believe so, though. I think that is a modern invention, because I'm just basing this off, again, I haven't read the original novel, but on the Wikipedia page, you know, when they list the actors of the show, because I thought she looked familiar, so I was looking her up, but I guess I don't know her from anywhere. But there is an entry for Fogg, and there's an entry for Passepartout, but there is no Wikipedia entry for her character. So I believe she's new. I don't think she existed originally.
Yeah, I think she is too. I think she is a modern invention to carry this show. I thought it was excellent, though. Action-packed right from the beginning, even with the setup of them getting ready to leave. It's not full of the action that we saw in France, but there's still enough action that it really held your interest.
Well, that's one thing, too, that I think it's a difficult line to walk when they modernize stuff, as far as, you know, not just making every show be about white people, for example, you know, and having actual female characters. Like, it's one of those things that if you don't do it carefully, it feels very cloying, you know, it feels very obvious that they're trying to update and make everything super socially progressive when the original source material wasn't. But yeah, it does seem like this show is doing a good job with that, because also in the case of Passepartout, I don't think I've ever seen an interpretation of him before where he's not a white guy. But if you are gonna be part of the underclass in France, yeah, you'd be a black guy. Why wouldn't you be? You know, like, it actually historically fits. It's not like they, you know, sometimes you can feel it. You can feel the hand of the author a little too much where they're trying to make sure everyone is represented equally, whether it fits or not. But if you can make it fit, then yeah, why not? Go for it. And I feel like they did a good job here.
Well, and we always think of black people having just gone from Africa as slaves to America, but they were taken from Africa and taken to France, to Britain, to Belgium, to Germany, and they were slaves in all those countries. They were servants and waiters, and so it's very believable that, of course, there were black people in Paris. We as North Americans always just think it was a one-way trip from the Ivory Coast or wherever to the United States, but it wasn't. It was to everywhere. So it's very believable that they also would be people who were fighting the French Revolution for equality, not just for poverty-stricken people, but for black people too. That's very plausible. And it kind of gives you a whole different insight as to what was going on in a black world. That it wasn't just the United States that picked them up and took them to the Western world.
Yeah, one example of that I remember the first time I went to the Netherlands, whenever that was, 2017 or something, and I was very surprised that it wasn't just, you know, because the Dutch people, famously tall, skinny white people, you know, they're the tallest people in the world. But then I got there, and not everybody is a tall, skinny white person. It's much more mixed than that. And when I did a little research, I actually found a clip from an Oprah episode about the past history of slavery from the Dutch, because, I mean, they were all over the place back in the day. They were, you know, they were getting around back in the day. And Oprah herself said she was, like, a little embarrassed to admit. She's like, I didn't realize that so many black people lived in the Netherlands. Like, you just don't know this stuff if you're from North America. We're just ignorant. <You know? laughs> So if even Oprah didn't know, I felt okay about myself that I didn't know either. But yeah, and you just realize, like, yeah, this stuff, we only have the North American slant on it. But yeah, it happened all over. So then I guess I would say, though, because, yeah, I loved the setup. I thought it was really good. The characters were really well established. And I was like, all right, let's get on the adventure. I guess what I felt like was a little weird, but maybe you had to do this early on, is obviously Passepartout is only going to have family connections and stuff in France. You know, it would be very unlikely for him to have a big family epic adventure as they get further on. So I guess you got to do it right away. But it just felt to me way too heavy for episode one. You know, I feel like if we're going to have his long-lost brother who dies heroically, or potentially heroically, you know, in an attempt to assassinate the French president, like, it was just so, it's like, where did this come from? We were just dealing with little Fogg and his silly life of being a dumb rich guy who barely knows what's going on in the outside world to, like, a French revolution and the slow motion and, like, no, my brother's dying in slow motion. And I was like, dude, this is episode one. You need to calm down with this.
But remember, in eight episodes, they have got to get around the world.
Yeah.
This, so stop one, has got to have something happen in it, because next week they're going to be, well, they said in Italy. Then they're going to go to Africa. Then they're going to go to, oh, I don't know where they go after that, but they've got to get to the Orient. And then they've got to get to North America. And then they've got to get back, all in eight episodes. So you got to move it along pretty darn fast.
Yeah, and that's just where, I don't know, maybe they would have kicked me out of the writer's room if I was working on this show. But it reminded me in that sense of, I bring it up a lot, but as far as older shows versus newer shows, the All Creatures Great and Small, where I enjoy the old version where the plots are a bit loose and the drama is subtle. Whereas in the remake, it's like overbearing music and strong interpersonal conflicts and, you know, drama. And that's how I started to feel about this. Like, why do we need a big plot? Why can't they just fumble through a country and deal with the travel part of it? And, you know, little things can happen. To me, it just felt like way too big and still unlikely. I mean, just what are the chances that Passepartout is going to stumble back into his brother's life? Like, it just feels like people writing a show all of a sudden. It really takes me out of it. I just don't like that kind of stuff. I don't like the super drama. I would like this show to calm the F down, basically. So I guess we'll see.
No, I didn't find that bad at all, especially since they set us up for it very subtly when Fogg told Passepartout that they were going to be in Paris. And you could see right then that he didn't want to go to Paris. Because he said, oh, we're just going to stay on the train. And we're just going to change trains. Yes, yes. No problem. That's all we're going to do. So then it was okay. I can go. So you knew that something was going on in Paris. And also the time frame, it's 1872. And 10 years earlier, yes, there had been a massive revolution. And they had been revolting all the way. I mean, France was a nest egg of revolution, where their governments, their republic governments, were the shits. So I didn't find that was too much.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of it just comes down to personal preference. But this is, again, why I like shows like Yuru Camp. You know, I like, it's not a popular, you know, it's just not the way shows are outside of Japan, and even mostly in Japan. You know, people would find it pointless. They would wonder why they're watching the show if it didn't have big dramatic moments. But I just don't like that stuff. I just think it's silly to me. It's ridiculous. It's like, this is way too much, way too heavy. The fundamental journey of just trying to get around the world in 80 days is plenty. I don't know. Like, it makes me a little worried about the other episodes. Like, is some big dramatic thing going to happen every episode? I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Well, what you find further on is the guy who made the bet with him. He hires people all the way along. He didn't in this one. It's too early in this one. But in later shows that come along, he has hired people that try to foil the trip. So when something should be fairly simple, we're just arriving here, we're landing, we're staying overnight or whatever, and then we're moving on. A lot of it is caused by this guy who hires people to foil the trip because he doesn't want to lose his money. And he wants to win the bet.
Yeah, it's definitely one of these things where, in a way, I've kind of like worked myself into a corner with this particular opinion, because it just makes, you know, it just means I'll never be happy, I guess. Because I do understand that it's not what other people would want. Like, if somebody presented me two versions of this show, like, do you want the exciting version or the boring version? I would say, boring version, please. You know, please take out all that super heightened, mega dramatic stuff. I don't like that. But obviously no one else thinks that.
But they gave you that. They did give you that when he was on the boat. going from Dover.
That's what I mean, though, is like, wasn't that enough? Wasn't that exciting enough? Like, why do we have to, like, I feel like the second half of the episode, it didn't just get a little more dramatic. It got crazy, super dramatic. This is where my father died, and my brother's carrying on his revolution, and I'm not. And it's like, I don't know, compared to just the Passepartout 2 being a flim-flam man and kind of, you know, sneakily making his way through life, I don't know. It's just, where did this come from? How is this appropriate to this story? I feel like it just didn't fit.
Yeah. And I suppose they probably could have cut that out and just had him go to meet the guy with the balloon. Because obviously you got to have the balloon in there.
But even that, though, that's where, like, I was like, oh, cool. Like, that awesome moment where you see the balloon and you're like, oh, there we go. There's some whimsy. A hot air balloon. And then, oh, no, monsieur, this was the balloon I made for my wife. And I was like, will you shut the fuck up? Like, can't you just get on a hot air balloon and have an adventure? I don't want to hear the life story of this dour Frenchman. So, you know, I very much did not like those parts. The drama parts can get right out of here for me.
Well, okay. We'll have to agree to differ, agree to disagree.
Yeah, and again, this is where I guess why I bring up All Creatures Great and Small. Like, this is just why I don't watch modern TV shows. I don't like them. I don't like how they do this. They're always yanking your chain, and they're always pulling at your heartstrings, and I just want them to leave me alone. But I very much like the start and the setup, and I think overall, like, I'm definitely going to stick with it for sure. I do want to watch. I mean, again, it's only 8 episodes. I definitely want to watch the rest, but yeah, I have this feeling that there's going to be a lot of parts. When it gets all super drama, that's where my eyes kind of drift, and I'm just waiting for it to stop.
Well, okay.
But yeah, again, it's weird. It's like it's not this show. You know, it's every show. It's every show. But this is, again, why, I mean, I'm sure I brought it up many times on this podcast, but this is why stuff like Super Cub and Eurocamp and Nan Nan Biori, like why those shows, those Japanese cartoons about nothing, were such a revelation to me, because I was like, oh, finally. Finally, someone out there understands that every show doesn't have to be like this, because every show is like this. So, you know, that's all. It's more of a larger cultural thing. But I just get this feeling like 100 years from now, when people look back at our TV, they're going to be like, what the hell was this? Why is everything the biggest, craziest thing that could ever happen? But I don't know. I guess we'll all be dead. So who knows? Who knows if that is how they'll feel?
Well, maybe at some point, we should look at the original movie that was made, which was made in the 60s, I think.
Yeah, there definitely was more, too, back then. You know, even just like screwball romantic comedies and stuff. Like, there was a bit more of a whimsical feel back then. Like, I guess that's the thing. When I think of Around the World in 80 Days, it doesn't seem like the kind of story where there should ever be a slow motion scene, a close-up on someone's devastated face as their brother dies. That should never happen. This is not the kind of story this is. You know, this is a story about Around the World in 80 Days, and it's just like went straight to 10 all of a sudden. But yeah, I won't bother belaboring it. But overall though, I still very much like it, and I loved the first half. I loved the setup. So I guess, yeah, I'll be curious to see as it goes on, which one will outweigh the other.
Okay, Around the World in 80 Days, 1956. Oh, it's made earlier than I thought. David Niven. This is probably more like what you think it should be. This is probably actually closer to the book.
One thing that's kind of interesting, too, is even just stylistically, like, you can very much tell that this is a modern show just in the desaturated look, you know, the colors. My favorite example of that is I went through a Treasure Island thing once where I watched all the versions of Treasure Island. And it's funny how you can see each era, where the one in the 50s was very brightly colored, you know, and just like Treasure Island, tropical. And then they made one in the 90s when Christian Bale was a kid, and it was kind of midway, you know, it was like still, it was kind of dour when they were in England, but then colorful when they got to the island. And then they made one in 2012 where it was just dour the whole time. Everything was gray and desaturated, and there was no bright colors in it. And it's like, it's just so interesting how things have become that way. And this show is a little bit that way too. Like, it's, you know, it's not bright. It's just sort of gray, but that might change as they get to other places. Maybe it's just because there's so much competition. There's so many shows. You know, there's so much stuff happening that even when I looked up info about this, I couldn't find anything because it's just one of a million. You know, there's so many shows now. Maybe that's why they feel like everything needs to grab you, you know? No slow burns. Don't be subtle. Just like everything has to be like, please watch the show. So, I mean, I guess while we're on this kick of 80 Days stuff, maybe next week we could watch the 1956 movie and then finish up this show on our own time after.
Yeah. I think I'll skip the Jackie Chan one.
I mean, I'm sure it's pretty cool in its own right. Jackie Chan makes great movies, but if you're going to watch a Jackie Chan movie, yeah, this doesn't, that is probably not the one. That's probably the wrong one to watch.